This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Survivor 48 is here, and alongside it, we're bringing you a brand new season of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. If you're a Survivor superfan, you won't want to miss this deep dive into every episode where we break down how we designed the game, the biggest moves, your burning questions. It's the only podcast that gives you inside access to Survivor that nobody else can. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
8:16, couple of minutes late, but Ronald Surpass joins us, former NOPD superintendent, head of the Washington State Police, Nashville City Police, now a professor of practice in the Department of Criminal Justice at Loyola. How you doing, sir?
I am great, Tommy. How about you?
I'm good. Happy St. Joseph's Day to you. Belated Happy St. Patrick's Day to you. And the history of Italians and Irish and NOPD, kind of complex when it comes to New Orleans, huh?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, every city of that era was a major port city, had the influx of immigrants fleeing Italy or choosing to leave Italy and Ireland. And one of the things about policing is it was never considered a profession. It was considered a vocation. Mm-hmm. So you didn't have to have entry-level education like doctors, lawyers, dentists. So the vocational skills were easy to reach quickly. The Italian and Irish had a lot of altruism on this question, and a lot of those families joined policing. And then the final piece of that, Tommy, is a lot of people go into the family business. I mean, I joined the NOPD in 1980 after members of my direct family had been serving since the 40s. Mm-hmm. And my family still serves the NOPD to today. So from 1940s to today, somebody in my family has been on the NOPD. And you can go look at some of the well-known family names, Boyalis, mm-hmm. Genovese, Canatella, Geruso, and see that these family lineages is not unlike plumbers whose kids become plumbers and grandchildren become plumbers. But the bottom line was during mass immigration from Italy and Ireland, New York, Boston, New Orleans were the major port cities of the country. A lot of people came to these port cities. Policing was a vocation. You didn't need fundamental education at that era to get hired, and people took this work on, and it became an altruistic family value.
I think it's interesting that when you look at the current attraction and attracting and retaining officers, the difference between vocation and profession and how that's changed. Expand on that a little bit. Professor Surpass, would you?
So a profession is generally considered some level of education, minimum achievement, and self-guiding ethics of the profession. Mm-hmm. Vocations don't have at least those two comparables. So while policing has experienced an explosion of more highly educated people, the culture around it as a business in the economy hasn't moved to the level of professionalism. A doctor practices by themselves under an educational standard and an ethical standard. Dentists, lawyers, accountants. Policing, because it is a paramilitary organization that has to do so many different things, has just not got there yet. I think being a police officer is a professional, but I don't think the economy sees it that way. But, Tommy, here's what makes policing more difficult than being a service-oriented professional, for example, a doctor or a lawyer. Mm-hmm. Tommy, I know you know Dr. Anand. Mm-hmm. I know his father. He was my baby's pediatrician, neonatologist that worked with my wife at Bettercrest. Dr. Anand, the father, is one of the greatest guys I've ever known in my life. Mm-hmm. And people pick him because of his reputation. But if somebody doesn't like him, couldn't they pick another doctor? Mm-hmm. Of course. Police officers who are vocationally oriented, who are not professionally oriented, have a higher duty, I think, to the public because guess what? you don't get to pick which police officer pulls you over. You can pick CVS or Walgreens, but you don't get to pick which police officer pulls you over. So on that level, I hope we will see police become more of a profession, because they have to earn, I think, in a way, a bit more respect than even the most vaunted professions in our world. Because if I don't like that lawyer, got a bad reputation, I won't go to them. But you can't do that when the police come. So we're still in the middle of hopefully figuring this out to make it more attractive to stay. And final point, professions obviously generally have better pay, benefits, and status in the community. And that's another thing that could be very helpful with recruitment or retention for police officers.
Very interesting. Let me take a break.
I did that with only one cup of coffee.
No, I'm proud of you. Let me take a break. We come back and we'll talk about crime.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover, all for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code SHAVE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code SHAVE. Enjoy.
In New Orleans, it seems as though things are going pretty well. And is that going to stay that way? Chief Ronald Surpass, our guest. Also, since we're talking about NOPD, we'll talk about somebody texting about the history of the upside down badge. I'll talk about that when we return. 821 traffic now, WWL. 826, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Ronald Surpass, our friend, former NOPD officer, family still involved with NOPD. Somebody texted in, Chief says, I have Chief Surpass beat. I'm related to the Druants, Druants, who've been people with NOPD for over 100 years. Even my mom was with NOPD. So how about that?
That's a great name. Paul Druant was someone that I used to work for and around, was an amazing leader in the NOPD.
I don't know how far your family goes back. Tell me about the history, before we move on to crime, just the history of NOPD and the upside-down badge, how that came to be.
There's two folklores. One is that in the late 1800s, when Superintendent Hennessy was assassinated by the Italian mafia, when they found his body, his badge had been turned upside down from the bullets. The other folklore is that following Superintendent Tennessee's death, they had a new photo of the police department in the late 1800s, and you remember that everybody's wearing the same outfit. Mm-hmm. And the photographer said, I'm ready to take the picture, but where's the superintendent? And the deputy superintendent said, well, he's standing right next to me. And the photographer said, well, I can't know who he is. He said, fine, and he turned his badge upside down. Hmm. One or the other is true. Mm-hmm. But basically, since then, every superintendent of police is a sign of respect for Hennessy being assassinated, which is a real story, has worn their badge upside down. My professional and very close friend, Richard Pennington, did not. Mm-hmm. And I think one other did not, but everybody else has, as a practice, certainly in the formal uniform, worn their badge upside down. The words are spelled correctly, even though the badge is upside down. And the Star and Crescent is the only badge like that in the country. The Star represents law and order, and the Crescent represents the Crescent City.
I know Ann Kirkpatrick does. I don't think her predecessor did. Who was that? I'm trying to remember.
Michelle. I thought I saw some pictures with Michelle maybe wearing it upside down.
And
some chiefs would wear it up.
She was the interim, right, or not?
Yeah, she was in it. Sean? No, I thought I saw him wear it, but I don't know.
Maybe not. I don't
and
know.
Don't be confused. Sometimes the jackets that are built for you, mm-hmm. they just have it right side up because they make 1,000 of them. So maybe gotcha. That's the case. But in the uniform, I think only two did not wear it. Warren Woodfork. Warren Woodfork, a great supporter of mine. He did not wear his badge upside down. So the only two I know didn't routinely was Warren and Richard.
But I think it's an interesting footnote to history that we need to remember every now
it's
and then.
It's great.
Let's talk about, in a couple of minutes we have left, about crime year-to-date in New Orleans, other than, and I'm not trying to diminish it at all, but New Year's Day. Things looking pretty good?
Well, there's two ways of looking at it. We should be happy, and I am happy, that crime numbers are going down. Those are the reported crimes. Those are the ones the police find out about, told about. There's a lot of people still not calling in because of the long wait time. We've got to deal with that. Secondly, and I would say this to all the mayoral candidates, if the NOPD is successfully reducing crime in cooperation with the community with half the police officers it had in 2011, It's about time for them to hire a company, not mine, to come in and say, how many police officers do we need? The reason it's important is if you go to work every day telling cops they're 800 or 900, but they should be 1,200, that's a demotivator. Maybe it is 1,200, but what if the math tells them now things have changed so much, you really only need about 950? Set that as a reasonable target if that's what the math said. There's plenty of good research now on how to staff and deploy police departments. It's not just throwing darts at a wall anymore. Because this notion that the police department is always so short weighs on the consciousness of the community and it weighs on the consciousness of the officers. So you can see the dichotomy there. Crime is going down, which is not just a police function, but it's important. So let's figure out how many cops we really need, mayoral candidates, and then hit that number and continue to move forward
so
in reducing crime.
If the number is 900 and the results are good, do you budget the same and give the people you have a raise to keep them?
I think you can do a lot of things if you know what a real number is, as opposed to somebody grabbed the number 1,200 out of the sky. When we came up with the number 1,600 in 2011, it was based on the math of a program we purchased and an independent staffing and deployment expert. We came to the exact same number of 1,600. That hasn't been done since 2011 or 12. Sometime during Cantrell's administration, it was also perfect, right? But anyway, sometime during her term, they just picked the number 1,200 out of the sky with no math that I'm aware of. When these candidates talk about mayor, they should focus their attention on, we need to know what the right size of the police department is and quit guessing. That's demotivating and is demoralizing to the community and to the officers. It might say you need 1,212. Okay, then that's the number, and let's work towards it.
Always an interesting conversation with you. You ought to do this for a living.
I've been thinking about it, but, you know, I wanted to be a radio host, but we can't get Newell off the radio. I mean, we got to get rid of him, Tommy. I don't know what we're going to do here.
Well,
he's
got a roast coming up at Delgado on March 29th. Maybe you can show up and, you know, just really put the dagger in him.
Oh, I will be there, and I am researching as we speak.
There you go. All right. They should have invited you. I don't know if you're a speaker or not, but they should. Thank you, Ronald. Appreciate it as always. Take a quick break. We come back, we'll talk to Jesse Noel, Regional Director for the Southeast Louisiana Flood Protection Authority. They got a millage coming up. We'll also talk to Allison Hotard, Executive Director of the Young Leadership Council, about Wednesday at the Square that starts up this afternoon. So a lot coming up. Stay tuned right now. A minute late. Time for WWL First News.